Welcome to Scouting for Growth. Today, we have an incredibly special episode that delves into the fascinating world of one of our InsurTech unicorns. Yes, this is Bolttech, a company where technology and insurance merge to redefine risk management. But beyond this disruption, there is a powerful force shaping the financial strategy of this evolution. Her name is Romani O'Malley, the Group Chief Financial Officer at Bolttech, a company that is quite literally electrifying the InsurTech space, now spearheading solutions in 35 markets across three continents. Romani is not just a numbers person. She is a visionary who sits on Bolttech's executive committee, shaping the company's financial strategy and acting as a linchpin for its future. With over two decades of leadership and strategic finance experience, Romani's impact reverberates through the boardrooms of the insurance industry's most respected names. From her formative years at giants like AIG, Liberty Life, and Swiss Re, Romani built a repertoire of professional experiences that few can match. Most impressively, she has maintained 12-year-long tenure at AIG, where she not only oversaw the UK's financial operations, but also played pivotal roles like becoming the general manager for Belgium and Luxembourg and head of UK regions. But what makes Romani exceptional? She's not confined to one role or sector. A diverse portfolio extends from insurance to reinsurance, from finance roles to capital and risk analysis, as well as strategy, even touching the realm of accounting and financial auditing. She is, without a doubt, a holistic strategist, uniquely equipped to guide Bolttech through the intricate labyrinth of today's financial landscapes. Yet when the lights of the office dim and the hum of her calculator phase, Romani finds solace and inspiration in the world beyond numbers. Whether it is planning an adventurous escape to a new continent or finding tranquility in the practice of yoga, Romani embraces life as passionately as she does her work. In today's episode, we are set to explore a multitude of topics. First, the journey to the top. What were the critical turning points in Romani's impressive career? Master strategist, how does Romani approach challenging strategic decision at Bolttech? Industry titan, what is the inner fabric of company like Bolttech, but also traditional companies such as AIG, Swiss Re, and GE Insurance? Romani O'Malley is not just a name on Bolttech's organizational chart. You will see, she's a force of nature in the InsurTech world, a professional who has mastered the art of financial strategy and yet finds time to master the art of living. A journey from the world of consulting to leading finance in global firms is a tale of true ambition, unmatched skills, and unwavering commitment to growth. So without further ado, let's dive in and learn from one of the best in the industry, Romani O'Malley. Romani, welcome to Scouting for Growth. Hi, Romani. Thank you so much for joining me on Scouting for Growth. It's an honor to have you here with me today.
Thank you very much for having me. Really delighted to be here.
So I want to start with your career. You have over 20 years of leadership and finance experience, Romani. What pivotal moments shaped your career and led you to your current role at Bolttech as Group Chief Finance Officer? Please tell us all. What got you here?
I'll try and keep it a little bit short. I have had a really interesting career. I'm incredibly grateful for it. I'm Australian, as you can probably tell from my accent. So I started work after university in Sydney, and I joined the graduate program at Ernst and Young. And so I think, or what was EY, the now EY was Ernst and Young at the time. And I think one of the sort of first kind of pivotal moments, I think, for me was making the decision to move from Sydney to London. And part of the reason I did that was I had the opportunity to have a secondment to London for 6 months with EY, to go and work on a client that was a big global client but headquartered out of Australia. And what that allowed me to do was just see just the scale of the rest of the world and the size of the opportunity, you know, in some of the other parts of the world. And, you know, Sydney's a magnificent place and a wonderful place to live. But, you know, I was in the very beginning of my career and seeing just the scale of London financial services and the opportunities there is, you know, what caused me to make the move. And that was obviously a big point in my career. I think the second one that, and the reason I want to share it is because I think it's about taking risk. I made a decision together with my husband in the middle of 2008, summer of 2008, that we would move to South Africa, to Johannesburg, for him to take an opportunity with a bank in South Africa. And that was a big deal, you know, that decision to move from London. I was with Swiss Re. I had a great job there, really good career, and I was very happy. But this was a really unique opportunity, and I think one of those where it was, you know, taking a bit of a risk to make that move, but ended up being, you know, one of the best decisions, you know, we've made actually for both of our careers. So that was also a pivotal point, and I think that just exposed me to just very different markets, and I had the opportunity to work across Africa. So looking at both emerging markets, but also more developed markets like South Africa. And that experience, I think, has been invaluable in what I've been able to build in the rest of my career. And I suppose all of that experience, whether that's London, you know, where I've spent most of my career, mature markets, or places like Kenya or Uganda, and understanding emerging markets, also gives you a sense of just where the future is headed with insurance. And I always knew, you know, that that was technology based, and that technology would be the underpinning of what really makes the insurance industry a valuable industry for society. And so I obviously had the opportunity to move into a role with Baltec that really shapes that and is part of building that future. And that's what's so exciting about it. But those moments definitely brought me to that point and to where I am now, and part of creating that future.
Congratulations. As I was listening to you, I was also seeing some common moments in my life. I moved from Paris to London. So that was probably the first risk I took. I was a student at the time, but the experience was so unique that I stayed. As you know, I stayed in the UK. And learning from markets, when I was a child, I wanted to be a air hostess because I wanted to visit every countries in the world. But I found another way to visit countries around the world. So I've been to Australia and I've been in South Africa. And like you, one of the things I learned from being able to work in other markets is appreciating the local people, the way people buy things. And what struck me when I was in South Africa, working there, is that, you know, we were already at with our smartphone, but people were using feature phones. And that was really a big moment for me because it's like, people, we really need to understand who we're dealing with. So let's not just go for advanced technology when actually the buyer, the customer, is consuming the product differently. And so I'm relating very much to your experience too, Romani.
I think one of the fascinating things about many emerging markets is that what you find, and I learned this spending time in Kenya, was that many of the things that have shaped the more mature industries now, emerging markets have the ability to just leapfrog that step. So if you look at banking and the use of mobile technology and telcos, in many parts of Africa, for example, it is far more advanced than what we see in developed countries, because they have skipped, you know, a number of the evolutionary steps that, perhaps some of the older economies have taken. And that means that, those markets and those consumers are really at the sharp end of innovation. And that's where a lot of the innovation can actually take place, and that can be brought then to scale, across the world. But it is fascinating. It doesn't necessarily happen in order.
It's true. It is true. So I'm thinking about you as a master of strategy. You're a member of the executive committee of Voltech, and you're not just managing finance within the group. You actually also focusing on strategic planning, which I believe more and more CFO, group CFO have to align the finance and the strategy, the business strategy of the group. Can you share an examples of maybe some challenging decisions, how you go about it in some ways? How do you navigate these specific circumstances as a finance expert, but also managing strategy for the group?
Yeah, I mean, I've been really lucky in my career in that I've been in many finance roles, and they are obviously, predominantly driven by economic and financial decisions. But I've also been in roles where I've run businesses, and that has given me a different perspective on the strategic decisions that you're trying to make. Obviously, a lot closer to the ultimate customer, whether that's a company. Or in the case of a business like Voltex, a B2B2C company, or whether it's a consumer, it has given me a different perspective as a CFO in making and how to make effective strategic decisions. I think the way I navigate that is that it's never you can't approach these things as one decision. Your leadership team is going to make, or your board, in combination with there's a number of stakeholders, that you've got to seek input from, but is never going to be making, one series of linear decisions. The complexity really comes with multiple decisions and how those interact with each other. And so I think you've got to be approaching these problems as multidimensional, and that you're always going to be balancing different things. The strategic decisions are essentially about trade-offs and maximizing the point, at which you can make sure that you're delivering, a number of different things to different stakeholders, without, getting out of balance, with one or the other. And I think it's true even of financial decisions. I could sort of lead a lot of the discussion to make to lead us to make financially optimal decisions the whole time. But if there's no customer or distribution partner really featuring in optimizing those decisions, then that's not going to be a sustainable path. So I suppose the way that I think about it, and the way I manage it, to give you an example, is balancing revenue growth with a path to profitability. For a company like ours, we could just grow, at the expense of everything else, and we would have an incredible growth rate, but we would pretty quickly, run into constraints, with investors looking for how are we ultimately going to create value out of that growth. And secondly, cash. You've got to have, fuel in the tank to be able to fuel that growth. So it's really about balancing things like revenue growth, path to profitability, path to cash flow positive, from an economic perspective, looking at organic versus inorganic opportunities, and thinking about where does it make sense for you to accelerate your path through an inorganic opportunity, versus, taking longer, to build that yourselves. And then ultimately just making sure that all of those things are aligned with your vision for what it is that you're trying to build. Because, you can be great at baking bread, but if you're selling insurance, that's probably not going to be a good decision, for you to make. And it sounds like a very sort of trite thing to say, but I do think a lot of teams can struggle with staying true to what it is that they're trying to build, because there will be lots and lots of opportunities, and it's as important deciding what you're not going to do as what you are going to do, just to keep you really focused on delivering what you set out to achieve, in the beginning. So it's the complexity that comes with multiple decisions and making sure you understand how those interact with each other and the trade-offs that you're making. I'm lucky we've got a really good team that has, vastly different experience and comes from different backgrounds, which allows us to have really good debate about the trade-offs and ultimately get to a point that everyone's aligned with, which is always a really interesting conversation.
That's superb. Trade-offs, always. I think 2023 put, I would say, within our insurtech world, a number of companies back into really understanding alignment between growth and profit. Because when I talk to the investors and when I've been trying to
Yes.
help some startups raise funding, the fundamentals which way I've been working in 2021 have changed. We want profit now. So being profitable, being focused, and being aligned with strategy, I think has been, and being clear on the business model has been highly in demand, I would say, over the past 12 months. And you're actually highlighting that that are the fundamentals anyway of building a growth business.
Yeah, I think it's been challenging for companies as well because, I mean, luckily, for Bolttech from the very beginning, we had an environment, in 2020 and 2021 where investors were extremely focused on revenue growth and they weren't spending a lot of time on profitability or cash flow. The pendulum then sort of violently swung to the other extreme, which was we are really only focused on profitability. And the problem with being just driven by, investor sentiment like that is you really do run the risk of having to consider quite radical changes to your plans. From the very beginning, Bolttech was always focused on path to profitability. So we have had extremely healthy revenue growth and we've grown, really, really strongly. So it's not to say that revenue growth isn't important, it is, but we've always focused on path to profitability and we are on track in delivering what we set out from a profitability perspective. So when that investor sentiment shifted from revenue growth to profitability, it didn't really require much of a change from us beyond just doing a really good job of communicating our plans. So it certainly changed perhaps the balance of emphasis in how we were communicating our plans, but it didn't really change the plans because that was already, where we were headed anyway. So I think you do have to always balance the making sure that you are addressing those things and that you aren't too extreme, one way or the other, with any of those metrics, whether it's revenue, profitability, or cash flow. And that's advice I would give any startup, is you've got to have your eye on that from the very beginning. Because if you're overly focused on one metric, when the market decides that they want something different, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah. I would like to go back to into your past just to give our listener a little bit of background around your 10 years at AIG, because this is not a small feat, I think. One thing which come to mind, Romany, is you have worked, I'm sure, on major initiatives at AIG. I remember interacting with, particularly in my time when I was running Startup Bootcamp, I was interacting a lot with the AI team because it was one of the areas which was very important, still today for innovation. So, as you were serving as the CFO of AIG in the UK, what were maybe some of the great lessons you learned that you were able to bring with you in your current role?
Well, thanks for the question. I mean, I had a fantastic career at AIG and the first thing I'd say that so I was 12 years with AIG
Oh, wow.
actually and my comments on the overall experience, I just had a tremendously positive experience there. It's such an incredible company. It is one of the best places in the world to learn about insurance and the caliber of the people there is really high. So having the opportunity to be able to work with those people was just fantastic. For a very large chunk of my career, having the opportunity to do different roles, both in finance, running businesses, I think AIG will continue to be a real source of innovation for the industry, partly because of its experience and its scale and its background, but also a lot to do with the people and the culture of the company. So why I raise that is I think that informing your culture is incredibly important, and that's something that I take with me to whatever position I'm in. I think secondly is just the it's a complex organization, and so understanding how to navigate, large global businesses, how to get things done efficiently in a big company, those are valuable skill sets. And then ultimately, what being sort of truly customer focused is, and then allowing that innovation to come from your customer is very important. But in the UK CFO role, I think the largest challenge that I had, which started at the very beginning coming into that role, was really returning the business to profitability. The market had been through what was a very soft part of the cycle. We had new leadership at AIG, and they were already, at the beginning of, a pretty big sort of strategic restructuring, and that involved really getting underneath the profitability of all of the portfolios. And the UK is an extremely important market, for AIG. It's probably the biggest portfolio. I don't know if it still is, but it certainly was at the time the biggest single market portfolio outside the US. So, and obviously, the home of insurance being London market. And that business, when I took that CFO role, wasn't profitable. And it was really a drained up of completely re-underwriting the book and looking at everything from limits to terms and conditions and exposures and coverage and the composition of the portfolio, the expenses, and making sure that the business was being run, as leanly and efficiently and scalably as possible. And so it was very much a whole kind of end-to-end experience over the 3 years that I was in that position. And I'm really pleased to say that, on leaving, that business was extremely profitable. And if I was to guess, so without actually knowing the details of business performance, I would actually predict that it is even more profitable now, just because the underlying quality of it is so high. So having that experience of turning a business, that was losing money into one that is making a really healthy profit, was just a fantastic experience. And understanding, how value is created, what are the levers, that you can pull that are really going to make a difference to financial performance? Because I think a lot of the time, people don't necessarily understand what those are, or they think that they are, one set of decisions when it's really something else. And I think that was just an amazing role, to really learn that, and the importance of just the quality of risk and the importance of pricing, risk selection and all of those things. So that was just a fantastic opportunity to take that job and taken all of that learning. Whilst we're not a balance sheet business, in Baltic, we're an enabler from a distribution perspective. Just the discipline of how you put a framework around, changing a business's financial performance, that is certainly something I'll take, forever, from that experience.
So you have worn several hats across your career, right? And I remember reading on LinkedIn also that you are the general manager for Belgium and Luxembourg, with AIG. So which of these roles was the most fulfilling for you and why?
It's sort of like asking to choose your favorite child or your favorite pet.
That is
I can't
about
do that.
path design, right? What I'm thinking is, we're all trying to find our authentic path, and you have found yours. So what can we learn from the roles, and what made you the most happy and fulfilled?
Look, they were all incredibly fulfilling roles. I loved the general manager role in Belgium and Luxembourg. Loved Belgium. I loved the team. Continue to love the team. Equally, the UK, my experience in South Africa, I think all of those were fulfilling because they were really different roles. Running a business is very different to being the CFO of a business, for example. And so it gives you very different perspectives. I think it's one of the things I'm always very deliberate about is making sure that whatever role I'm doing is that you're clear about that. Is understanding, what is that role asking for, and making sure that you understand how you're going to have an impact on the overall business, from doing that role, and from doing it well. And so, for example, whilst I've had both CFO and general manager roles, they're very different, and what the role is asking of you is very different. And so I would say my way of working and the way that I you have an impact in each of those roles is very different. It makes you what I've learned, I think, is getting clarity around what that particular role needs from you is really important, what the team really needs from you. And then, just being as sort of open and engaged as you possibly can. I think what I've learned from all of these things is that you're just never going to stop learning. And the best teachers, are probably the people that are around you, and the ones that you're interacting with every day. So playing to your strengths, but surrounding yourself with a team of people that are really good at the things that you're not so good at is really important. Don't hire into your own likeness. I think that's a, that's a mistake. You've got to almost actively find people that are very different to you and then bring them together, to surround you with people that are perhaps good at the things where you're not so good at, but that also allow you to then really play to your strengths. So I learned that in all those roles. They've all been incredibly fulfilling, really interesting. And I'm learning a whole new load of stuff in this role. And I mean, it's been 2 years in the role, and it has been, one of the steepest, most incredible learning curves I've had so far. But I think it's always what you make of it. But understanding what it requires of you is job number one, and being really clear about that.
So let's transition to Bolttech. So I'm going to tell you a little bit of a secret, Romani. I remember in, was it in 2021? I was advising a company who used to focus on finding tech talent for companies. And they sent me an email and said, "Have you seen this, Sabine? Do you know this Bolttech company who has already reached a billion, billion-dollar unicorn status?" I said, "No, I don't know that. In 1 year, how can that be?" So moving to Bolttech, moving from traditional insurance company to an insurtech firm, right? We can talk about Bolttech as an insurance technology platform and insurtech. What motivates you over there, Romani? What makes your life such an amazing experience working with the team?
Well, I think you said it. One of the things that's really motivating is the team. It is it's such an incredible team over here at Bolttech. And one of the things that's made us so successful is the combination of both insurance knowledge and tech talent that we have at the company. I think the tricky thing with insurtech is that, if you are if you're very heavy in your team on insurance knowledge, you're going to have a re really good handle on how the insurance industry operates and how that gets done. But you're not going to have the knowledge it takes to just truly innovate around, particularly around insurance distribution, and to be fast enough and agile enough to build that. And similarly, insurance is a complex regulated industry. If you've got purely tech people without a lot of insurance knowledge, you're going to be able to do things around the edges, but it's so complex. You're not really going to be able to unlock how to make scalable differences in how insurance is traded and how it's done. And so I think the combination of bringing together, insurance knowledge and tech people is a bit of Baltic's secret sauce, I would say. I think secondly is a lot to do with the culture. I mean, there's three aspects that I really like about the culture. It's very transparent. So there's a real desire for everyone in the company to understand, the strategic objectives, what we're trying to deliver, and how we're doing against our plans. And I share a lot more widely and a lot more transparently with the whole team at Baltec around that, perhaps than I have ever done, but it makes us really effective in, rowing towards the same thing. I think secondly is alignment. We spend a lot of time. We're a truly global company. People are all over the place. We've got an exco of 12 members, and they're in, I think it's 9 or 10 different countries. So we really are spread all over the globe, from Melbourne to, London, Singapore, Kuala Lumpur, San Francisco. We're all over the place. So we really do spend a lot of time making sure that we are really aligned, we're on the same page on what our priorities are and how we're doing. And then finally is we're just really fast, very, very quick to adapt to evolving conditions and kind of course correct our actions. That also makes us really quick to deliver for our partners. We're a B2B to C business, so we don't deal directly with retail consumers. What we do is we there are so many pathways already available to the end consumer. And the beauty of, what Baltec does is we just make it really easy to add insurance to that. There isn't necessarily a need to create yet another pathway to a customer when there's so many already in place, whether that's with a bank or a telco or a retailer, or a, auto company. Take your pick. There are, there are vast industries with fantastic customer relationship journeys, and it's really a matter of just plugging into that and then making that really effective and easy, to allow more people to get coverage and ensure the things that they really value. So that makes it a very exciting place to work. And it also means that the size of the opportunity is just vast. That there is such an unmet need. There's such a huge protection gap. And coming back to what I was saying about Kenya, for example, this allows us to tap into potential distribution networks in those markets that are really underserved by insurance. So we can have a very big impact that also has a sustainability and an access to financial services element to it, which is really important, particularly for people in a lot of those emerging market countries. So it's just a really exciting place to be able to do that. And we are always changing. We have fantastic relationships with our distribution partners. So they are, we have just constant feedback loop going with them that both drives both improvements in what we offer, but also sources of new innovation and potential for what they want to offer their customers. And we love that, makes it a very exciting place to work.
That's super cool. I heard that, what is exciting is the ability to have an amazing culture to work around, but also being able to be transparent and enable people to get the information they need to make the right decisions. But also the speed, right, which is linked to technology, whether it's insurance and technology or industry and technology. Technology plays a big part in what we do every single day today. So, Rami, when you look at your approach today at Baltec, it's an organization with operations, I guess, across the globe. I read on the website it's 35 markets, more than 35 markets, and three across
Yes.
three continents, right?
Yeah.
Do you have to do things slightly differently? Are there challenges you need to address differently as well as you look at the scale of the company already today in such a short period of time?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think that is the challenge. You want to make sure that you're building, a scalable business, but that is offering what customers really need in those markets. And I think it's a balance between those two things that is really important. So the first thing I'd say is that it always, for us, it starts with the technology. And we have really unparalleled technology. And it's scalable technology. So it allows us to look at individually, what each of those 35 plus markets are really needing from the insurance industry and what types of coverage, what types of assets or experiences are really important to them that they need insurance for. And then we can use our tech, to be able to deliver that in a really fast, agile way. And it is very effective for us to scale the technology. I think that the other thing to think to take into consideration is that, as we see ourselves as an enabler, not as a disruptor. We aren't necessarily there to create, again, another whole new proposition. What we're doing is we're just connecting really effectively through those existing customer pathways that I talked about to providers of insurance, and to make that much more seamless and much more efficient and easy for customers to access. And that brings with it an ecosystem mindset. So we also acknowledge that, we do a lot of things at Baltec. We are able to, we have regulatory licenses that we can use for distribution. We have our technology. We have an extensive product offering. We've got a lot of carriers, insurance carriers providing product on our platforms. But we also recognize that sometimes we're not the best company to be either building or offering something. And so we're always in a partnership mindset. We're always looking for not only for our distribution partners, but also capabilities. There are some amazing businesses out there that are really innovating in everything from, customer experience to product innovation to efficiency. And so we're always looking for partners to work within that broader ecosystem to help us. I think the other area is, again, just not forgetting that it's all about the tech. And our teams are really focused on leveraging new technologies in really strategic ways. So, I mean, we all know that AI is going to disrupt every aspect of the insurance value chain, right? I think that's not
That's
a
given.
controversial thing to say. We've always had AI built into our platforms from day one, because we're a tech company. And so it's been really exciting to see how our AI capabilities are evolving, and that increasingly, we can provide deeper insights and much better decision making and really supercharge the changes to the solutions we're offering as AI develops. So that's a really exciting area. And then finally, we've got to do that in what is a really challenging financial environment, and make sure that, I'm sort of the big bad wolf in this sense, but keeping us true, from a financial discipline perspective, and making sure that we are really resilient so that we can weather, whatever the economic environment is throwing at us, and that we just stay really focused on a sustainable growth trajectory, and our path to profitability. So, I think that I'd probably summarize it as making sure that we're always leveraging the technology, that we are innovating right at the front. So it's the 35 markets that are actually driving what they need from us, and that is truly local and in many cases customized. But that the scale of what you can bring allows you to deliver what they're asking for, in a really compelling way. And that's what we do. That's how we run the business,
Well,
day in, day out.
that's incredible. I mean, it's exciting to hear as well, because we are going through a time of adaptability and change. And the insurance industry is going through significant change already over the past years, but you already mentioned it, AI, emerging technologies are coming out at pace. And so for me, it's about staying ahead, continuously staying ahead. How do you stay ahead of trends and adapt your strategies to fit this changing landscape?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've got a, one of our values in the company is about outside in thinking. And so we've always nurtured an environment of bringing outside thinking into the company, and we make it a real priority to stay on top of what's happening in the industry. One of the ways is through just staying very connected and plugged into thought leaders like this podcast
Yeah.
and making sure we've got really good coverage with the different industry associations. We go to a lot of events, not only because we want to showcase what Baltec is doing, but also because we learn so much. We don't leave any of those events without a large quantity of potential either opportunities or potential partnerships. I talked about the ecosystem or having learned about something new that is happening. So we find that the investment of the time in just engaging, with all of the different players, that are currently part of that, the change that's going on, is an incredibly good return on our time. And it's also because that's where you can have perhaps some of the more multifaceted, more complex discussions about some of the more difficult problems that need solving for. And those always need more than just one or two participants. They need the entire value chain from the insurance world to be bringing people together to talk about how to solve for those things. So that's another way that we do it. We learn so much from our partners. So our distribution partners are just a huge source of both challenge and innovation and ideas for us. And many of those industries are really far ahead in innovating for their customers. And so, we can learn that, for the insurance industry and for our own for our own product offering. And then, finally, I'd say I think we also have a role. Not only, it's not about staying abreast of it so much as creating it. We should be creating trends and some of these changes and strategies. So in one sense, yes, we're sort of staying abreast of it, but in another sense, we're driving it as well. And we're kind of creating that future. So that's exciting.
Yeah, and it's important as for leaders like yourself and Baltec to actually explain to our industry, which is insurance, that times are moving at pace. And so being able to play your ecosystem partners, really engage with them and learn from their challenges and identifying opportunities critical. I'll tell you, when I started the podcast, I wanted to solve for a problem which was probably related to what we call corporate venturing. 100,000 startups out there, only 30% raise funding. I said, why is that? And so the podcast has given me an opportunity to interview so many amazing people in insurance and outside, also in fintech. And some of the discovery, I can bring them back into our industry. I would like to move into Romney work-life harmony now. You have a demanding career. You're on plane, I'm sure, a lot as well. So how do you do, what do you do to relax? What are your interests, Romney? I read you probably like a little bit of yoga as well. So how does that contribute to your work-life harmony and to your personal life as well, and professional too?
You've done your homework. You're right about that. A lot of yoga. Gosh, I'm lucky because I love my job. So, I get to spend a large part of my time doing something that I really love. So I'm very lucky in that way. I don't like the term work-life balance. And I think particularly since COVID and since the pandemic and people experiencing lockdown, I think everyone's gone through that sort of coming back out of that. The blurring of boundaries, between work and everything else, and it's important to set them. But I don't have sort of work and then life. I just have my life, and work is a huge part of it. But I think if we focus too much on trying to make neat solutions to what's now a pretty complex equation, particularly for people who work at home, for example, all it does is we just put more pressure on ourselves to do things the right way, when in fact it's just you're sort of inventing it a little bit. So I think the answer is really individualized, and so I'll talk about my experience, but I'm also quick to say that what works for me, is potentially impossible, for the next person. So whenever I have these conversations with people at Baltec in the team, or if I'm having a discussion with someone I'm mentoring. You know, one of the things I'll always say is that you've got to figure out how to make it work for yourself. And that's going to be a function of, you know, how many dependents you have and whether you have children you need to look after or parents that are dependent on you and all of the complexities that go along with that. You've got to figure out your own formula, because no one will do it for you. And then you've got to set the boundaries that you need to set. So I have a pretty fluid working style. I am obviously working in a global position across a number of different geographies. So I'm working across time zones. So I keep a pretty fluid working style. I don't try and carve out specific working hours and then create boundaries around those because it just stresses me out. So I prefer to be, you know, really flexible. I start really early. Because the biggest component of our business is in Asia, and our HQ is Singapore. So the boss, you know, is in Singapore. And so I start as early as I can, and then I spend, you know, a large part of the morning and the early afternoon, you know, pretty much is my heaviest time. And then obviously cycle through sort of Europe time zones and then later the US. But in between all of that, that's when I squeeze things in. You know, I'll squeeze in going to the gym, or, you know, I'll squeeze in, you know, doing a bit of yoga or something sort of physical to just to be moving around. But it'll be at all different times. I don't kind of necessarily do that at sort of set times of the day because I need to keep it flexible. But what I really love, so if you're asking me what do I do to unwind, I just love cooking for people. So our place is one of those houses where, you know, it's where our family, you know, ends up. I have my in-laws in London and two nephews, and some more extended family from my husband's side. And I love to just get everyone to the house and then just cook up, you know, a massive feast. And similarly for all of our friends, we've got quite a big group of friends in London. And, you know, weekends just often involve having a house full of people, and a big spread of food and a lot of people catching up with each other. And that sort of interaction just restores my soul. So I think the combination of having people in over and around you and cooking for them and, you know, making sure I fit in a bit of exercise somewhere along the line during the week, as well as the weekends, that's enough for me. I think as I've gotten sort of older and kind of gotten on in my career, I think what's interesting is, and I think this is something that happens because I've had this conversation with other people, both men and women, is that what the needs that you have and what you want actually become really simple. You know, the times where I used to, you know, want to be going out and doing different things and going to fancy restaurants and all of that, you know, now what I really love is the simple things, and those are actually pretty easy to do. So that's enough for me, and that creates plenty of balance in
Very
my life.
nice. Very nice. I like you. I cook for other people. My husband is on business this weekend, so I'm not going to cook. And he texts me every night to check, have you cooked for yourself? I said, no, I love cooking for others. So we have this in common. But I love your statement around boundaries. We are living in a fluid world and we need to set boundaries. The way I set mine is by making sure that I, you know, during the weekend, for example, I will not take calls. I will usually write. It's my time where I actually write for myself and for others. So boundaries around when I write is very critical for me. And for example, even going to Italy to do that is, you know, a pleasure, but also something special that I can do every so often. But it's also about managing expectation and doing it with intent. My last question to you, Romani. What is your vision for Baltec? Where are we going? Let's go into the future. Can you share some of your key strategies for the company over the upcoming year? Can you spill some beans for us?
I mean, I can. Obviously, I'm very focused on the financial ones, but I'll leave those for last. You know, I think that the three areas, I would say, a bit of a continuation of what I've said before. So the first two being ecosystem. You know, we're building an ecosystem, and we're doing that by building a lot of capabilities ourselves with the tech at the center and working with our distribution partners to continue to innovate that. But we're also building partnerships. And I think the stronger, we can build an ecosystem just across the opportunity in insurtech, the more effective insurance industry we're going to have at the end of the day. I think secondly is just fully embracing the possibility of all of the technology that is evolving now is incredibly exciting. We will be right in the middle of that. And artificial intelligence is obviously core to that and really harnessing the opportunity that that brings. And I would go so far as to say to every single aspect of your business. So we will be heavily focused on that the coming years, not only obviously this year, but also beyond. And I think that will drive a lot of the future of Bolttech. And finally, is for me, I've got to have this in there, is just delivering on our a value creation on the financial fundamentals. I'm really delighted to say that we hit a big milestone in 2023. In December, we had our first positive EBITDA month as a company, which is massive. So getting, having such high growth year on year, but also to be able to turn the corner around profitability and get into being, what will be for the 24 year, a full year of EBITDA profitability is really exciting. So staying true to the financial fundamentals, but, really just living and breathing everything that technology is bringing to the industry is what's in our future.
Very nice. Thank you so much, Rami, for joining me on Scouting for Growth. If somebody wants to come to you, get in touch, contact you, or contact the team, what should they do?
Well, we are available in a number of different ways, as you would expect. So we're very active on LinkedIn. You can find us on LinkedIn. It's Bolttech. You can also email us. We're on pretty much all of the social networks. We're really easy to find. You can always do the old Google, or you can get in touch through the podcast and drop us an email that way. So very happy to share any further information about Bolttech and what we're doing, or if anyone's interested in partnering with us, we'd be delighted to hear from them.
Thank you so much, Romani, for joining me today on Scouting for Growth.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a really, I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thanks so much, Sabine.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Scouting for Growth. Please subscribe, share with friends, and leave a five-star rating. Your rating is so valuable. I review all of them, and my team help me adapt content to meet your needs. Also, connect with me on my preferred channels. I am a B2B growth expert, so you will find me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Threads, and X as well as Blue Sky. All information available below. Until next, keep scouting for growth.